Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. I'm Doogie Critchley and today I'm joined by Mike Atkins.
Good afternoon.
Zach Gillard.
Buongiorno.
And for a brief time, Sonny Snelling, his podcast debut.
Hello there.
Basically, guys, we'll get on to why Sonny sounds so sad in just a second. But this is the Games Gone Mad version of Extra Time. It's going to be coming out bi-weekly and will be more of our news roundup. And there is only one place to start this week with the big news of the week, which is Jose Mourinho being appointed Spurs boss. Daniel Levy said of the appointment, "In Jose, we have one of the most successful managers in world football." And from Mourinho's perspective, it definitely makes sense. He's been out of football since December 2018 when he was fired by United, when they were 19 points behind tabletoppers Liverpool at the time. He still has a house in London. He's obviously had two very successful spells in charge of Chelsea, winning three Premier League titles, three League Cups and an FA Cup. He's won 21 trophies across his 19-year management career, including eight league titles in four different countries. But this appointment has definitely divided opinion of the football world. So we thought, what better way to kick off this podcast, which will start with about Mourinho, than by bringing down our resident Spurs fan even, Sonny Snelling. Sonny, what are your initial thoughts about this appointment and what are your general feelings?
I'd say at the moment I'm very mixed feelings. I'd say Pochettino, it's very emotional considering he is one of our best managers of all time next to Bill Nicholson. Mm-hmm. You know, he was closing in on his European appearance record as well. I think he had to, against Olympiacos, he would have levelled it, I think. So he definitely is, you could definitely say he is up there with one of our greatest of all time, but
but
you got to compare, that was a time when, you know, during the 60s Bill Nicholson was such a strong manager. Obviously we're talking Premier League era, Pochettino no doubt.
I mean, Bill Nicholson actually won things like
exactly
that.
that's my one problem. As many Spurs fans, we have a lot of expectation at Tottenham. Like, it was
why do you have expectations?
Because we have grown so much, and under Poch, don't get me wrong, but
I keep getting so annoyed with Spurs fans at the moment. They're like, oh my God, we never won. You guys didn't win anything because you're battling in one of the most dominant eras of the Premier League,
yes,
under Manchester City and Liverpool.
Our two chances were when Leicester won it, when every one of the top six was off form.
Was that his first year?
That was his third year, I'm pretty sure.
Fairies.
Because what was it? Second?
Yeah, 16, 17.
Yeah, so that was his third year. So by that time he had.
Did you still had Chadley at that point?
I mean,
probably explains why he didn't win it, if I'm being honest.
But I just think it's down to a lot of different problems. It's not just Pochettino wasn't the main problem. I'll go with that. Mm-hmm. But my hope is that maybe by bringing Mourinho in, Levy will definitely have like a change of heart. I'd say, like, I mean, with the wages, the rumoured wages are double Poch at 15 million.
Yeah, more than Simeone, Conte, mental. Klopp.
So if that doesn't like assume like a shake-up of transfer fee or like recruitment...
But one of your best things at Spurs is being able to get these players, not on the cheaper side, but essentially being able to pay less for them and then being world-class. But the second you open up the bracket, which you have done already by giving Harry Kane and Ali and all these guys the contracts... where they are getting paid over £100,000,
yeah,
the floodgates will open, mate. And we've seen that with the signing of Mourinho.
I think the problem is, it's what myself and Atkins were talking about before. I said how we've run like very well, and Atkins appointed it, like, maybe too well.
You run too efficiently.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Like, it makes sense. Like, I mean, I always compare the Chelsea situation. Some of your youngsters, before they're even like starting, like they're already on 80k, and I've always been against that because obviously that money in football is ridiculous.
I think the Chelsea bit gets blown out of perspective. I don't think any of them are on 80k apart from Callum Hudson-Odoi, who had a season. I reckon the end of the season or just before it ends, Mount will get a new contract, all those guys will get new contracts.
They deserve that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do think it's slightly different.
Sonny, as a Spurs fan, how do you think Pochettino should be remembered?
I'd give him in. I know obviously he hasn't won anything, but I would say he's an icon. Like to us, like he made us believe. Like, don't get me wrong. Like the emotions of Spurs fans are very up and down. But we remember, like, he took us to a Champions League final. Although I've used terms to say, like, we got there through luck. Like, there was a lot of, like...
But you need luck in football, mate.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, passion there, especially, like, last night watching the tweets of him getting emotional in the interview. It's very, like, that's the other side, and I think, oh, like, have we been a bit too rash here? You know, consistently in the top four, he's made us a strong team. Like, in his first season, we finished fifth, and then after that, we've had...
I think it's four top four finishes, yeah, right? And you've only had three since 1990 before that. So yeah, he has completely transformed you into challengers.
Yeah, considering that's in the era of, as Zach said, like, the dominance of City and Liverpool, and, like, Chelsea under Conte were very strong, well, yeah, and Leicester's remarkable run.
You're also not a joke anymore, which was what... Like, no, legit, though, there was a period where like... I think even Spurs fans are like, okay, like, we are the joke club, right?
Yeah.
Of this top half of the Premier League. Whereas now, it was like, whenever you face Spurs, it's, oh my God, we've got, like, you've got to be in top performance here, otherwise you're going to lose.
But the only thing is, we will be remembered again as the nearly team. I feel like it's, we nearly won the Champions League, we nearly won the Premier League.
I mean, that's what I was going to add. I think, how much do you think that Mourinho coming in is Levy and whoever the owner is, Joe Lewis or whatever his name is?
Yeah.
How much do you think Mourinho coming in is then thinking, right, this is probably the best team we're ever going to have.
Yeah.
We need to win things now. And I know we sort of laugh at the fact, you know, Jose Mourinho is a winner and things like that. But he does have the experience.
Yeah.
Sadi, how much do you think that him coming in is then saying, right, we need to win something with this lot.
Now or never.
Jose Mourinho is the best manager available right now.
It's a big risk, though, man.
To win something, I
think we've gone down that route of a project. So the Poch project was 6 years in the making.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the project is now at its peak.
It might be at its peak.
So it's a case of, if you don't win something this year or next year,
you're
going to have to start turning over all the players again.
Like, I think it's trying something new. I mean, we see a lot of clubs go through. We see a lot of clubs go through like managers like willy nilly. And, like, that can be effective sometimes, like, different styles and, like, different sort of... They bring in their different, like, players when they come in. But I just think it's one of those things. Well, it sounds really... Like, only time will tell. Like, the Poch changed our game. Like, he brought in his press. He brought in, like, the players he wanted. But as you've... And obviously, this is not down to him. This is down to recruitment. Like, we haven't replaced when we needed to. Like, our defence is... very rapidly in decline. I know Alderweireld and Vertonghen, their contracts are up, but they're sort of at the end of their careers. And what my biggest concern was, like, someone like Davinson Sanchez comes in his first season, looks very strong, looks like a great replacement. And then since then, he's been on the decline, and it's just...
Hard to say decline.
Well, hasn't been given enough opportunities.
Decline is quite a strong word.
But the thing is, he has had opportunities, but it's... Again, it's been in a three at the back, then it's at a two at the back, then he's at right back, and then is that a Pochettino? Mm. Like, it's a mixture. It is a lot of mixture of both parties have had faults in this, how it's ended, because, you know, he's played right back because we let go of Kieran Trippier, and obviously he doesn't think Aurier is good enough, or Kyle Walker-Peters, or Foyt, or whoever. So it's a bit of like trying to put, you know, what's it, square pegs in round holes sometimes at Tottenham. And when you haven't got the money, which we still haven't got the money to compete with the rest of the top six. And that's another remarkable thing Poch has done. But, it, you know, Levy is... I hope Mourinho makes him buck his ideas up a little bit.
But then I think that's so unfair, in my opinion, on Poch, that bringing in Mourinho is what makes him spend. Because the thing about Mourinho, right, you've got players which will probably do well. And like this is the thing that annoys me as well, is that you'll probably play West Ham on the weekend and you'll beat him. Mm. And everyone's... Maybe.
I'm 100%.
And it's like, oh my God, look at Mourinho. Like, this is because of him.
Yeah.
When in reality, you could put anyone in that dugout and they probably would have beat him, because sometimes just a change of person, like a little bit of a different
system
helps.
Maybe it needs a bit of like a refreshment.
I just think with Mourinho, man, if you don't commit to his values... It's going to be another thing where in 2 years, your club now, okay, you're struggling. Then just wait, mate. Just wait. When you've not... Yeah, it's going to be literally rotting.
It's a 4-year deal.
Mental.
Or until the end of 22-23. Yeah. I can't see Mourinho lasting that long.
Well, he's never lost over three in any club. So yeah. Exactly. Even Porto. It absolutely makes no sense whatsoever.
And I think with Mourinho as well, the other issue is, if you look at his last four managerial jobs, so that would be Inter Milan, Chelsea, Real Madrid, Chelsea, United. At each club, his level of success has gone down.
Yes.
And then when he leaves, the level of chaos he's left has gone up each club.
That's true.
You think the thing like...
You're worrying me now.
Before Real Madrid, and even arguably Real Madrid, Jose knew when the right time to leave was.
Yeah.
Okay, he left Inter... he left Chelsea at the perfect time. He left Inter after winning the Champions League. He arguably left Real Madrid maybe a little bit too late, but not too bad. And he fell out with players. And then Chelsea won the Premier League. And then the season after that, gone. United, oh my God. They finished second place, but in a season where not everyone was that great. Yeah.
It's like he's on a sinking ship, isn't he? And he knows when to get
and
in.
And this is what I mean, man. If you've got players that aren't willing to buy in, if you've got players that aren't willing to buy in Pochettino's system, if they don't want to buy into Mourinho's system, then it's going to be ugly.
I think it's such a bizarre appointment, just because everywhere Mourinho's gone, their first window has always been big spend. Mm. Like in Madrid, in his first windows, Ozil, Khedira, Di Maria. When he first went to Chelsea, when he went back to Chelsea in 2013, it was Willian, Matic, Schürrle, Luiz came back. When he went to Man United, it was Pogba, Bailly, Mkhitaryan, Ibrahimovic. And unless Spurs are going to completely change their policy of the last 2-3 years, which has been, you know, conserve funds while they pay off this new stadium, I just can't see it working. And then you also look at players like Alderweireld and Eric Dier, who he's wanted before. Great news for them. But where does someone like Harry Winks fit into this, who's been brought through by Pochettino, really was starting to develop into quite a serious Premier League performer, looked very assured, you know, playing well for England, etc., etc. I can't see Mourinho, who's always favoured more sort of... maybe not defensively minded, but at least physically dominant central midfielders like this of Matic, Essien, John Obi Mikel, players like that. Where does Winks fit into that? Ryan Sessegnon was bought this summer, hoping to break into Spurs' first team. I just can't see it happening under Mourinho. Like, there's so many weird things about this appointment. And I feel like they had to do it because of your decline this year, and your form has been shocking. I think it's 25 points from your last 24 league games, which is relegation form.
Yeah.
But they should have done it in the summer. But then I think it came into Pochettino didn't want to resign because he knew he was going to get this payoff as well. So they're it's quite a difficult position, and he's, you know, walked away with £12 million. Mourinho's on something like £15 million a year, which, as I said before, is more than Klopp, Conte, Simeone. Like, well done to his negotiating team. But I just can't see this going well. Atkins, as a West Ham fan.
Yes, I am.
Big game of the weekend.
Cup and final. Are you delighted that Mourinho has now gone to Spurs for the sort of chaos factor? Or are you worried? Or what are your thoughts as a West Ham fan?
I'm even more in the dark than I was this time yesterday. I've got absolutely no idea what's going to happen. I've always said that West Ham are the sort of team where if you want a result, if you want a player to score a goal, just play West Ham. Like, Torres scored his first Chelsea goal against West Ham. The amount of teams that have gone on like 6-7 games without winning
and then
they play West Ham and beating us comfortably is just ridiculous. And I don't know, I'm hoping that maybe there will now be no focus on West Ham this weekend. All the focus will be on
very
Spurs.
True. That's a very good point, man.
And on Mourinho.
And Pellegrini as well. Focus will be off him.
I mean, to be honest, if we just play well, I'll be happy. Yeah. Because... as much as, you know, Spurs fans live it up as like, oh, it's West Ham's cup final, all that sort of stuff.
I've said that a few times, I'll be honest.
Whenever we play Spurs, as much as obviously we want to win, West Ham fans are usually content if we play well. And that just hasn't happened in so long that hoping some of this sort of circus around Mourinho means that we can just do our own thing. We don't have to worry. Pellegrini, I mean, sure, Pellegrini's under a bit of pressure, but the focus isn't going to be on him. The focus is going to be on Mourinho. And hopefully it'll sort of calm it down for us, if you know what I mean. We don't have to worry as much, because whatever happens, if we win, if we draw, if we lose, whatever happens, the story's going to be Mourinho.
It's going to be
oh, new manager bounce, or oh, they shouldn't have got rid of Poch, or, you know, nothing's changed, or something like that. So I think it's just so weird. Mourinho's the Spurs manager. I don't know what's gone on here.
I don't understand though why, like, Levy would have known, right? He's going to sack Pochettino. Why do you do it on the game week? When you just had a week or so to do the England game.
I was reading
the
Athletic article, which is a very good article actually, which sort of discusses the whole like scenario and situation, and it sort of said that he did want to do it last week.
Then why hasn't he?
But he wanted Poch to walk away.
Poch to resign for the conversation.
You know he's never going to do
that.
But
Levy is the
tightest man.
He's an idiot. But he's also, he loves to keep face. Like, no matter what happens, Levy
But now your keep face is you've got Jose Mourinho, whose tactics are very, like, not very different to Pochettino's, but will take time to get used to.
Yeah.
You could have given him a week. You could have given him a week to at least sit there and go, okay, boy. Because he might not even manage the game.
But apparently today he is taking... We usually train on, like we were going to train Wednesday morning, but it's now going to be Wednesday afternoon, so he can take the training session and then...
But still, man, like he could have had a whole week and a bit to at least try. Now he's got 3 days, barely. And especially on the Friday, you can't do that intense of training.
It's a good job he's paying my stamina, isn't
it? I think the sort of final question on this is, we've talked about Pochettino's legacy, we've talked about Mourinho coming in, what that might bring. Where do we think Pochettino is going to go next? Because for me, it seems like Bayern Munich is the obvious option. Like, I don't think Real Madrid are going to get rid of Zidane, especially because their results have been so much better than performances this season so far. It feels like Bayern Munich's probably the option, but Hansi Flick started very well against Dortmund, got that 5-0 win. So where do you guys reckon?
He will go wherever he wants to go. If a club wants him, good enough club wants him, he will go there. It's like,
unless it's
Real Madrid could sack Zidane to get in Pochettino. Bayern Munich could get rid of Flick to get in Pochettino. Juventus, would you be surprised if they got rid of Sarri?
No.
It could be anything.
I think if you're Poch, you take a bit. I think managers are too quick sometimes to go back into jobs. Because that is a stress, especially with someone like Poch who would have been so invested in Spurs for so long now, for 6 years. I think the smart play is take a year off. Mm. Like, look what he did for Pep. Took a year off, went to New York.
He's doing Allegri well as well.
Exactly. So. Like, I think, man, like, for him especially, because he's still got so much time to do whatever he wants. Take a year off. Because right now, all the manager's jobs are filled. The ideal ones that he'll take, as you said, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, they are filled. Maybe they're replaceable, but they are filled at the moment. So you take a year off, or at least 6 months off.
Yeah.
Wait till the summer, when obviously you reckon Bayern Munich are going to drop thingy. And other jobs may open up, like Real Madrid, like Arsenal, like Man United.
Next summer, he is going to have his pick of the jobs.
But this is what I mean. So wait. Don't expect him to just go say, oh, I've joined this club straight away. But maybe even wait the year after that one.
Go back to Espanyol.
Exactly.
Have a little relaxation.
Go to Argentina, River Plate.
Yeah, I can see him going in Bayern Munich in the next 2 months, but we'll see. I agree.
Two months.
Yeah, definitely.
Is he just
interim?
So he's
yeah.
He's
Hansi Flick's there, okay. Interim, but he's they said they're in no rush.
Yeah, he's the interim manager, but he's doing well. And okay. I think as long as he's doing well,
yeah, I just think
they'll keep him. But if his results start to dip, then you know. But.
Do you feel proper? Do you feel emotional though? Like
I am. I'd say I'm.
In your lifetime,
sad,
this is
sad but hopeful. That, like if you think about it, we were the team that was. You know, Wando Ramos, Harry Redknapp, changing managers left, right, and centre. So to have a manager for 6 years and now go through this sort of thing again,
and now go back to a manager who's going to be gone within 2 years, amazing.
But at least we'll win the Carabao Cup.
But you, oh, next
year.
This is it. Though.
Let's finish it there. We can't, you know, celebrate a Carabao Cup win, although it probably will happen. Let's move on to our headlines. Thanks.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Coming. Right, our first headline is what we were actually going to lead with before the chaos of Tuesday night in North London. And it's England securing their place for Euro 2020, Atkins. Good weekend for them, I'll say.
Yeah, very good weekend. But, I mean, it's what we come to expect of qualifiers now.
Exactly.
I think the loss to Czech Republic early on in the campaign was something like the first time in a decade we'd lost a qualifying match. So qualifying for it isn't necessarily the big news because that's what we expected. But the team... especially the attack, is absolutely ridiculous. I think he's going with sort of Rashford, Kane, Sterling. They're just so much fun to watch. And I'm not sure about you guys, but I can't think of a better front three or better front line.
In Europe.
Ooh,
Belgium have a very good front line.
They do.
Lukaku, both Hazard brothers, and can fit in others.
They could put De Bruyne
Mertens
as well. I suppose if Deschamps, he rarely does it, but if he went... Mbappe, Griezmann, and Ousmane Dembele, that would potentially be up there.
But I think your point is very good.
Yeah, and we've also got the
Sancho to come on,
Hudson-Odoi, and also everyone's young. It's like we've got a good 5 or 6 years, you know, playing as well as they are, because they're. We've just spoken about Spurs, obviously, but even though Harry Kane's not doing a job there, whenever he plays for England, he turns it on.
Definitely,
yeah. He's like the sixth top goal scorer now for England.
We haven't even mentioned Tammy Abraham having such a good year as well.
Indeed, I think for England fans in general, it's. But I also kind of think we now are expecting quite a bit, right? So the World Cup was a bit more of a shock to people. It was more of a surprise. We didn't necessarily know what was going to happen. Whereas now we're kind of like, okay, we know we've got a really good team. We know we've got really good players. We know they can work well together. We've seen that at the World Cup. Can they do it at the Euros? And I think this Euros coming, I'm full on the board that we're going to win it. But like we should have expectations, though, to reach the semis minimum.
Definitely.
Minimum.
Especially with the, I think all our group games are at Wembley.
Yeah.
And then I think our last semis, 16's in Dublin, and then maybe the quarters in St. Petersburg or Rome or something like that.
The semis
back at Wembley. So
it's home support, man. I mean, if we're not at one of those games, I'm going to be thoroughly disappointed.
I know, we've got to get there. But yeah, Atkins is right to instantly go to the attack, because no side scored more than their 37 goals in qualifying. It was level with Italy, but they got the benefit of playing Armenia in their last game and putting 9 past them. And it rounds off like the most incredibly high-scoring year for England. They scored 38 goals in 2019, which was most in a calendar year since 1908. They've averaged 3.8 goals per game this year.
Mental.
The best return since 1948. And they're now confirmed as one of the top 6 seeds.
Oof.
So hugely exciting.
I was at the...
you were there.
At the Montenegro
game. At the 7-0.
Oh, my God.
What a start.
The attack is. Really, you didn't really see much of the defense because there wasn't much that happened there. But the attack is just like they're all on the same wavelength. Like the fullbacks, Ben Chilwell looked incredible.
Hat-trick of assists within about 20 minutes,
mate. They're so integral. Especially, it's really nice to see. It kind of shows you that Gareth Southgate is actually quite an intelligent manager. Because at the World Cup, he was playing what 3 at the back, and then now he's realized, okay, we've got some.
I think
England's new crop.
I think you play 3 at the back out of necessity more than
necessarily that's
wanting to play 3 at the back.
But his new formation kind of uses the fullbacks to really good effect. Like Trent Alexander-Arnold for the last 20 minutes went in centre midfield.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. Like it's full. I think his tactic, although there is a half decent defence there, but his tactic is let's just outscore the opponents. Because I do think there are worries in some regards to the defence. I don't think Keane is that great.
No.
I don't think...
It's Maguire plus one other, isn't it?
Yeah, literally. I think John Stones is good, but he's not the quality that he was.
Well, he's got a big ass going back into the City team. Really.
Yeah, indeed. I think... I don't know. I would like to see Tomori there, but I just maybe think that's a... Maybe come the qualifiers and the full season.
I think he'll
under
be
his belt,
in the squad, presuming he keeps his starting spot at Chelsea.
Exactly. And, you know, there's still Rudy come back for that. But the only other issue I have maybe is possibly Pickford. But Pickford for England compared to Everton is a different player.
I remember he made one outrageous save, sort of diving away to his left, sort of flicking a header over the bar.
Even at the World Cup, he was brilliant. And like, again, his kicking is just superb. So I think I think every single England player there, my worry sometimes is like, oh, the central midfield. I think Harry Winks is good. Don't think he's that fantastic. But Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain surprised me. Incredible.
It sounds like Oxlade-Chamberlain will be a starter.
Yeah,
100%. Come 2020.
It's got to be Oxlade-Chamberlain and someone else.
In the World Cup, he's been so unlucky with injuries.
Have you seen that video?
The ITV one they put out. The 2014 World Cup, Euro 2016. All of Europe, the World Cup 2018, all of them ruined.
He's still only 26.
I know.
This is ridiculous.
I love that he told Arsene Wenger to play him in centre midfield. Wenger said no, so he moved to Liverpool just so he could play centre midfield his quality.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I think the midfield is quite an interesting sort of, not really conundrum, but it maybe doesn't have the strength and depth of some other areas. I think Winks has now clearly gone ahead of Declan Rice.
See,
I
disagree with that.
Okay.
And I know you're thinking it's a West Ham bias.
Yeah, here he
but
I think it depends on
I purely think because... We were playing Montenegro, expected to attack.
100%.
Why do you want a holding midfielder that just sits there, tackles, passes it off, which is exactly what Declan Rice does? Why would you not go for a more creative midfielder in Harry Winks in that position and then play Declan Rice? Like, imagine in the friendlies building up, I wouldn't be surprised to see Declan Rice play against like Denmark when it's tougher, when you need that more defensive solidity than you would do against a Montenegro or against a Kosovo. There's no point playing Declan Rice in these sorts of games.
I don't think he's not got a purpose. I think he'll definitely be in the squad for the Euros. He'd be mad not to take him. But I just think my starting midfield would probably be Winks, Henderson and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
I just don't like Winks and Henderson. I just don't think they do anything.
But no, Henderson is on.
Henderson's really good. Henderson's been playing so well.
I think you've got to include him in a midfield three. I think not as a holding player, but charging up and down, like whipping balls in. He's had such a good season so far for Liverpool. I think you can't really leave him out. Plus, he'll be one of our more experienced heads. Lots of people say he's actually our natural leader in that squad.
Yeah, I do forget about that kind of side.
And one other issue, which I think is more suited to Zach. Some people will say that Harry Kane, phenomenal record, 15 goal involvements in his last six games for England. But should Tammy Abraham, if he continues this run of form, be starting in the Euros?
I love Tammy to bits, but...
Well, he's your best mate.
Yeah, he is. Scotland speed dial. But I just think with Harry Kane's kind of record as England striker, and like he's proving it against every friendly, like... He has to be the one that starts.
Yeah.
I mean, unless there's an injury or unless there's something that happens in the build-up to it, because maybe he'll get his form back under Jose Mourinho. It's guaranteed. But of course, I would love to say Tammy should get it.
Yeah.
But I just think under merit, it should be Kane. And if he say first game he's terrible, then that's your chance, Tammy.
Great option.
I think people tend to forget that this England team is still a team. It's not a case of putting the players in the best form. You still want them to play as a team.
Mm. Exactly.
So if you take Kane, who's been the focal point of this attack for... A
couple of years.
Well, in this system anyway, since the World Cup, if you take him out and put someone else in, it changes the entire 100% sort of complexion of the team. Whereas you want to try and...
I think Kane should start as well. I think he's been absolutely crucial.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Obviously, Abraham in the squad. Vardy, if, you know, he may or may not come out of retirement or whatever.
No.
It's...
Stay away.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say that. But yeah, I think, yeah, people tend to forget that the England team is still a team. They still need to have that coherence that you see Premier League sides have.
Yeah, I agree. I think particularly when England play three in midfield, it's quite important for Kane to start up front because he's so comfortable dropping deep now.
100%.
Spreading the balls through. I remember particularly when England beat Spain. Was it Spain 3-2 away?
Yeah,
he was absolutely phenomenal playing balls in for Sterling and Rashford. I feel like he's almost plays more like Bobby Firmino for England than he does for Spurs, if that makes sense.
It's like when you see, and I'm not saying he should start by any means, but it's like when you see Dele Alli play for England, not only does he play well, but he also links up extremely well with Kane because they already have that rapport.
Yeah.
You need the players and the team to
it definitely does.
To have that rapport to, you know, try and get the best.
But that's the interesting bit, right? Like I don't know if it's you were going to say, but I was going to say, like, what happens to Mount, Madison and Alli?
I know. I feel like they're competing for two spots, yeah. I think it's probably Mount and Madison if the squad was picked tomorrow, but we shall see come May. But guys, we can't claim to be, you know, a global YouTube channel / podcast without mentioning some other possible candidates for it. I mean, Zach, who would you say is your sort of out and out favourite? You're very much going for England.
Yeah.
Who else is in the mix for you?
I think the only other answer can be France. France. They are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like the depth in their squad is like stupid. They've just got some of the world's best players everywhere. Like at the back, you've got Umtiti, if he comes back from injury, Varane,
Longley.
There's another one, Upamecano. All these youngsters, they've all got the Hernandez brothers in midfield. Pogba, Kante,
and Ndombele
up top.
Mbappe,
Griezmann, Giroud.
It's like a who's of like ridiculous. International football.
But they've been a bit shaky in qualification, though. I mean, I know they were unbeaten. Well, no, they weren't unbeaten. They lost to Turkey their first game. I know they were unbeaten since then. But last week, you know, they came back late to beat Moldova. Yeah. Obviously, they lost 2-0 to Turkey. They only beat Iceland 1-0. I know Iceland are better now, but you'd expect France to... I think in Euro 2016, in the quarterfinals, it was like 6-1 or 6-2 or something like that. I'm not sure if it's almost a World Cup hangover.
Possibly.
But France haven't been as...
Well, a lot of their
dominating
players,
as we'd expect.
A lot of their players will be the players that played in that World Cup, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's a lot of competition to play. Like, they would have only had one season off between the 4 years, which was last season. So, you know, I think you might be quite right that it's a hangover, but I just think just some of their players are still so young. And, like, Mbappe, if we thought Mbappe was good at the World Cup, he's going to absolutely be incredible at the Euros. Because he's another couple of years older, more experienced, knows the team better.
They've got a certain sort of pressure on them this tournament.
They do.
Now they're going in as strong favourites. They haven't won a Euro since 2000. They obviously were runners-up last time out to Portugal. But yeah, that was the first time since 2004, I believe, that they'd made it past the quarterfinals. First time past the quarter since 2000, even in 2016. So they've got a certain amount of pressure. Atkins, would you say Belgium could also be in the mix there as strong favourites?
I mean, now's their time, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's we've been saying now for the past 6 years or so, I think, since sort of Euro 2012, that you know Belgium were the dark horses, but now they have to win. Like, they're probably not going to get a better opportunity.
It's their golden
generation. It's their golden generation, and it's their golden generation's probably last hurrah.
100%.
Maybe Qatar at a push, but if you look at Dries Mertens, he's 32.
Hazard's 29. Lukaku's getting on.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, Lukaku's only sort of 26 right now, but Witzel's close to 30. And then you look at their defence, we've spoken about them already, Vertonghen and Alderweireld, both in their early 30s. Don't even know if Belgium have any fullbacks these days.
Yeah, who was it in the World Cup? They were playing Chadli.
They were playing Chadli and Carrasco, weren't they? Yeah. And they're not even fullbacks, they're wingers.
Yeah. So, but they were pretty impressive in qualifying. I mean, it was 9 out of 9. They only conceded 2. They scored 34. And they've got goal scorers. I mean, they'll be a threat.
Yeah, but it's very much the same as England, the qualifying. Belgium would expect to walk the qualifying.
Yeah.
I think maybe the only difference is you look at Belgium, you look at Lukaku, and his goal scoring record for Belgium is mental. I don't know how old he is, 25, 26. He's already scored more goals for Belgium than Rooney did for England.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually he's
been their top goal scorer ever for about 3 years. Yeah, he's on an absolute unreal tear.
I love Lukaku,
for Belgium.
So he's doing well.
Much badly maligned even. And obviously we can't, you know, mention this without mentioning the likes of Spain, Germany and Netherlands look like they're coming into a lot of form. I saw the highlights of the Netherlands versus, I think it was Estonia,
Netherlands are really good,
last night, and Gini Wijnaldum popping up with a hat trick. Germany absolutely dismantling Northern Ireland 6-1 with Serge Gnabry scoring another hat trick. So there are plenty of options.
13-13 for Gnabry at international level, by the way, which is ridiculous.
Quite a tear. I don't know how he's doing it quite. But yeah, let us know on Twitter, why not, about who you think will win the Euros. And let's move on to our second headline. Our second headline concerns the very good news that Luis Enrique has announced that he is returning to his role as Spain manager. He obviously stepped down in June, citing personal reasons, after 11 months in charge. It was then announced in August that his 9-year-old daughter, Zana, had died of cancer. So this is just absolutely fantastic news from the football world that he's back in management and he feels, you know, strong enough to do that. There's been, you know, a bit of slight controversy over the way it was handled by the president, I would probably say. I mean, Atkins, you've sort of been across this a bit more, with Moreno sort of being pushed aside slightly.
Yeah, it seems that way. He had been given reassurances by, I think it's Luis Rubiales, the RSF president. But then it sort of was leaked before Monday night's game against Romania that he probably wouldn't be in charge for Euro 2020. And then it came out that Luis Enrique was going to take back the job, which Moreno, by the way, said he would always welcome.
Yeah.
So there was sort of no doubt about it, but in the way that it was handled, that Rubiales had given him the assurances, and then approached Enrique anyway, saying, "Would you want the job back for Euro 2020?" Mm. Enrique's apparently said yes. So there's nothing official as yet, but it's an open secret that Enrique's going to be back. And Moreno's just not happy at all with the way it's dealt. It looks like he's not even going to return as number two, which, as upsetting as it would be, I hope it doesn't mean there's been any sort of personal breakdown between Enrique and Mourinho, because obviously they're very good friends, and as you said, he's been his number two pretty much everywhere he's gone.
So the way it's been handled,
not great, but
the overall news is fantastic.
Although, having said that, Luis Enrique, the only Spain manager to actually lose a game of their last four managers.
Really?
Yeah, Lopetegui was unbeaten.
I mean, they've all had very short stints.
Lopetegui, I think, had 20 games and was unbeaten. Hierro was unbeaten during the World Cup because technically a penalty.
Penalties
is a draw. Moreno, 7 wins from 9, 2 draws.
Nice.
Not bad. But yeah, I mean, it's good to see Enrique back.
100%.
It's hard to...
I completely forgot Hierro was the manager.
Because
Lopetegui quit, was sacked sort of the day before because he'd...
Was that the one when he cried, or did he cry at Real Madrid?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know whether he cried. I can't remember.
He cried at one of them.
He had a pretty awful 12 months or so. But yeah, just wanted to say from the Football Daily team, great to have you back, Luis Enrique. Had a phenomenal record at Barcelona as well. People forget he's had the best winning percentage of all their managers this century. Better than Pep, better than Tito Villanova.
Barcelona fans are... They'll still moan.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously won that famous treble, two La Ligas, three Copa del Reyes, and a Champions League. So great to have you back, Luis Enrique, and all the best for the upcoming Euros.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Right, it's time for anything but football. I don't know whether you guys know
how
to do
sound effects. Oh my god, that was embarrassing.
I'll make a jingle for next week, or actually it'll be in 2 weeks' time because we'll be doing our normal sort of how to fix, etc. is next week.
I'm sure Pat will veto it anyway.
Yeah. On this week's Anything But Football, we are talking I'm a Celebrity, which is sweeping the nation at the moment. Zach, for those of you know the general public like myself who know nothing about it, please inform us.
You don't watch it?
I kind of dabble. I've watched about 30 minutes cumulatively over the last week. Please inform me, how's it going? Who's your favourite? Who's the losers, etc.?
So if you don't actually know what I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, is basically a bunch of so-called celebrities get put into a jungle in Australia and they basically have to do challenges, live off not a lot of food, all that kind of stuff. Great British TV. It's been going on for a while now. We've seen some icons come out of it. This year, it's, you know what, the past couple of years, if you can't tell, it's my favourite TV show and I would love to go on it one day.
Get Zach in the jungle.
Oh, but make that a petition, I would beg. the past couple of years, the lineups haven't been that great. But this year, oh my God.
Okay, who are we talking?
Well, first up, they went, you know who we'll get? Caitlyn Jenner.
Doesn't really get any
massive
bigger than that. Yeah,
it doesn't get bigger than that. They then went and got Ian Wright. Fantastic signing. Adele Roberts, don't really know who she is.
She's a really good Radio 1 DJ.
Oh, there you go. Nadine Coyle, who has has the best accent in the entire world. I love her to bits. Miles Stevenson, who won X Factor. I get tweets that I look like him. He's literally just got curly hair. Also with the SK stuff, please stop. I'm begging you.
That's an official message.
Andrew Mitchell. Is he the comedian? He's probably the comedian. Jacqueline Josser, who is from EastEnders.
Big names.
Also used to go out with Horner's mate.
Really?
For real?
Yeah, legit. Roman Kemp, who's ex-Football Daily.
Yes.
So we're rooting for him. He's showing me the way.
I had no idea he worked at Football Daily until he was
freelance, but he used to
Back in the day, Football Daily Weekly. What a name that was.
Indeed. James Haskell, who is hilarious.
Yeah, now, this is a guy I do know.
What a legend.
One of the biggest characters.
Massive.
Did he win the World Cup?
No, honestly, he wasn't in the World Cup squad this year, but he's won a few.
He's so funny. And Kate Garraway, who's getting Kate Garraway, who's not getting the best.
Is she getting the bad press?
Well, she's just like, the thing about a celebrity, right, is if you scream about anything, if or you make a big thing about anything, you're going to get picked to lose things.
If you show the smallest bit of weakness,
they'll pounce on you,
because the people at home will be like,
Atkins,
exactly.
Who's been showing the most weakness for you? Is it Kate? Or?
It's Kate. Okay.
Jacqueline Neely.
Conversely, who do you think, who's your favourite?
Oh, it's hard to say so far. I mean, I haven't seen last night's episode yet, but based purely off the first two episodes, really like Caitlyn Jenner.
She's sick.
I didn't know, as with a lot of people, I didn't really know what to expect, but she's just a normal person. In terms of, obviously, she's part of the Kardashian crew.
Don't you think it's mental?
I think she's more down to earth.
Don't you think it's mental that Kim Kardashian, who lives in LA, is just watching one of the Britain's best ever TV shows?
Yeah, like it's with some...
Like,
with like some
Jacqueline Rosser.
And I'm not just saying that because of the connection, but I think Roman Kemp's come across really well. There's a certain level of, sort of humility he's shown.
That's
because
the thing, though, because I think a lot of people...
You forget with Roman Kemp how star-studded his family is. Yeah. Like, obviously, his dad was the singer in Spandau Ballet. His godfather's George Michael.
Mm. Yeah.
You forget about these things, and then you sort of see him talking about it, and there's sort of this shyness about him, which for a breakfast DJ, which is what he is, you don't really get that on the airwaves, but I don't know. I've really grown to like him.
I think
around
a celebrity, the thing is, like, what people like is, one, if you're funny, which is normally, like, most people are quite funny.
Yeah.
And two, like, human. Like, if you are, like, say something happens, you're like, oh, you're right, mate, or like, you are just having a little joke with everyone.
Just a kind person.
Literally, it's not hard, but for some reason, celebrities do find it hard at times. But this crop, all of them are really, really good, and they all get on really well with each other. There was a little. Oh, I won't say it because you're watching. You haven't watched it yet.
I'll not listen.
No, there was a little bit of
a scuffle.
An altercation. Bad, but Roman had said something.
Uh-oh.
And Adele was a bit.
Oh no!
But I'm not going to say any spoilers.
And bringing it back to football, how is our man Ian Wright doing?
Being honest. Uh-oh. The first second episodes, people were a bit skeptical. Like, he hasn't really, like, for someone that you know has like a big personality, hadn't really come across.
Okay.
Didn't really come across yet.
But out of his comfort zone, perhaps.
Maybe.
I mean, but this is outside his comfort zone.
Literally. And then, but yesterday's episode, he was actually really good. So he's just starting to come across. I think now they've literally all just been grouped back together. So it's going to be interesting to see
how the dynamic.
And there's still two more people to join. There's guy from EastEnders and Sonny Selling, Kirky.
Kirk's making an appearance. Okay, my final question on this is, who from the FD office would do best in the jungle? As two fans, who do you reckon? I know, Zach, you can't say yourself.
Oh, really?
I'm a Celebrity is the sort of show where everybody thinks they'll do a great job.
Okay,
because I think I would go on there and do a good job. Zach thinks he'd go on there and do a good job.
I'm not sure whether I think I would. To be fair, I'm not that keen on the, you know, the.
Joe would go on there and think he would smash it. Chris would go on there and think he'd smash it.
Do you think that's the inbuilt sort of, you know, the confidence, the inbuilt arrogance of the FD team? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I feel like most people. It seems like the most. I'm not sure because it's short. People forget how short it'll be over in sort of 2.5-3 weeks. And it's sort of effectively you just have to starve yourself for 3 weeks and
lose a bit of weight.
Like on that topic, James Haskell takes like 4,000 calories a day. How's he going to survive in the jungle?
He's going to come skin and bones.
But I'm not sure who I think would actually do the best.
I think Sonny would do really well.
He hates rodents.
Sure, but I think people find that funny. Like, I think the thing is, right, people like to see.
Well, just put him next to a group of
but
rats.
But people, I honestly think if you like to do one line story, you just have to be a decent human. Mm. And I think he'd get along with everyone. Like, he's not going to really cause any trouble. I think Joe would probably do well because Joe's like pretty personable. Is that
personable,
the word?
That's right, yeah.
Not going to say myself, but myself.
Do you know who wouldn't do well in our team?
Hey.
Pat.
Who wouldn't?
Wouldn't.
No.
Pat would get. Nah. Pat
I mean, for a starter, he would never do it.
Without his rose tinted moisturizer and his pummel
two hours in, and he would have lost it.
He'd get so annoyed with everyone. He'd lose his head.
Or it'd be the making of him. Who knows?
The thing is, it depends who you get in there with, right?
Yeah.
Like, I actually think all these guys are half decent people. Whereas if you get a couple of people where you're like, you're
so like there's that there's that one series a couple of years ago which had like. Dennis Wise, Amir Khan and somebody else who I can't remember.
Yeah.
And there was a whole thing with those three bullying Ian Lee, which actually made Ian Lee, he didn't win it, I don't think. He came like third or something. But they were all sort of bullying Ian Lee during the whole thing. And it really didn't reflect well on them to the point where they were being voted to do things and then were eventually voted out of the show.
So the public have your back.
But then you saw this sort of, as I've said with Roman Kemp, you saw this sort of humility and vulnerability to Ian Lee, which made everyone, you know, fall in love with him a little bit and want him to actually do really well.
Fair. Well,
as long as Roman remembers his roots, that's all that matters.
Exactly. Give us a shout out.
the Ajax of entertainment.
I think you guys have made me want to go check it out. So I'm going to be tucking into I'm a Celebrity. But that is all we've got time for on Extra Time for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you guys thought about it on Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe to it, download it, leave a review.
In fact, everybody listening to this right now, go onto iTunes, give us a 5-star review, and maybe in a future episode, we might read some out. Because that's
like
always
it.
Easy content.
When are we going to do a Q&A? Like an actual, like, people
I'm
submit
sure, I'm sure there'll be one coming up for
Christmas,
for Christmas or something
Q&A,
like that.
Q&A, that'd be brilliant.
I'd love it.
But yeah, leave your 5-star reviews, give a comment, and we might read some out.
Perfect. Thank you very much for joining me, Zach Gillette.
You're welcome, my friend.
And Mike Atkins.
Thanks very much.
And we shall see you next week, next Thursday, similar time. Thank you very much. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.